The following episode of K-Voice was recorded at midnight, March 27th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you've listened to this show. Enjoy the show.
No facts, no prayers, can bring back what's no longer there. The silence are damned, the body count is on your hands.
Smile.
Hi guys, welcome to K-Voice of Resistance. I'm your host, Kelly. We have a lot to get to, so let's get to it. Welcome to the Resist! This week in Congress. Congress is home on vacation, so let's discuss some bills that have been proposed for when they return in a few weeks. We'll start with House Bill 5103, Gun Violence Prevention and Safe Communities Act of 2018. With 12 co-sponsors, Danny Davis, Democrat of Illinois, introduced this bill to increase federal taxes on firearms and ammunition. Davis said, quote, "This legislation is a proactive approach to reducing gun violence by using proven preventative programs, which have been starved for funds until now. As part of a comprehensive multidimensional strategy to reduce gun violence, this legislation closes major loopholes in the tax law and lays out equitable, long-term, substantial strategy to provide requisite resources." Unquote. Grover Norquist, the president of Americans for Tax Reform, pouted, saying, quote, "Democrats are seeking to tax guns out of existence," unquote. If I had it my way, that is what Democrats would be doing. But it's not. They are simply trying to fund much-needed programs to serve as a band-aid to the gaping, gushing wounds that the explosive damage caused by guns does. And look, yeah, this is a bill in the House with no Republican support, so it doesn't stand a chance. But it serves as a good example of what could be possible should the left be in power. Also up for a vote is HB 5015, Saving America's Pollinators Act of 2018. With 20 Democratic co-sponsors, Representative Earl Blumenauer, Democrat of Oregon, introduced this bill to ban insecticides that threaten bees and other pollinators until the Environmental Protection Agency ensures they don't harm pollinators. High rates of bee mortality have created a terrible trend within the U.S. economy because honeybees help pollinate nearly $15 billion worth of agricultural crops. And pollinators in general pollinate over $24 billion. The loss of bees has forced farmers to turn to pollination services, basically rental bees, which raises cost as much as 20%. The causes of bee deaths have been attributed to several factors, including diseases and viruses. Additionally, the mysterious colony collapse disorder has befuddled researchers as to its cause. Colony collapse symptoms involve bees abandoning their hives and not warding off pests that evade into the hive. This leads to the death of the next generation of the hive's bees, exacerbating the problem. And look, it's according to researchers, it's going to be very difficult to identify which insecticides are negatively impacting bees, as there are other chemicals found in beehives unrelated to insecticides that also could be damaging to their health. But we know that some, if not all, are. And so a major argument for the right echoes that of the gun debate. Because we can't solve all bee deaths, we shouldn't solve any.
We shouldn't try.
We should at least try. Bees are critical pollinators. They pollinate 70% of around 100 crop species that feed 90% of the world. And consider what happens when we lose all the plants that bees pollinate. We will then lose all the animals that feed on those plants, and so on and so forth, on up the food chain. There are about 7 billion people on this planet. How do we suppose we will feed that many people? According to the BBC, we are losing bees at an alarming rate. Possible reasons include the loss of flower meadows, varroa mite that feast on their blood.
I want to suck your blood!
And as Earth Unplugs' Maddie Moa explains, climate change.
A study in Colorado suggested that the wonky weather might be disrupting the usual synchronization of opening flowers and bees emerging from hibernation. It found that pollination levels may have dropped by as much as 50%, whilst the snoozing bees missed the flowers in bloom.
This is particularly tragic because it happens even in pristine areas untouched by humans, disease and pesticides. Sadly, global warming is just that, truly global.
And of course, the use of pesticides.
And if these weren't enough, the final nail in the coffin may be pesticides. One particular class called neonicotinoids, or neonics for short, seems to be a major culprit. In the lab, tiny amounts of neonics cause honeybees to struggle to learn where their food sources are, how to find their way home again, and even promoted viral replication inside them. It seems to be having a huge impact in recent years. Since 2006, US beekeepers have lost around 30% of their hives during the winter each year, much higher than the usual 5 to 10%. In certain provinces of southwest China, heavy pesticide use and loss of habitat has effectively eradicated wild bees. The situation has got so bad that farmers are having to pollinate orchards by hand, going round with a paintbrush and a little pot of pollen.
All right, out of Congress and into the executive branch.
I will do everything in my power to protect our LGBTQ citizens.
Our asshole-in-chief followed through on a promise Friday. Donald issued orders to ban transgender troops who require surgery or significant medical treatment from serving in the military, except in select cases. This time, unlike last year, when the orange bigot announced the ban, Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis and the Secretary of Homeland Security are on board with the plan to take our country back a decade or two. It is disgusting. They are framing their bigotry around the idea of military readiness. It is the same policy that has been blocked by the courts, so I don't know how they expect this to fly. LGBTQ advocates have sought to head off such a disgusting and unpatriotic move at the court, swiftly slamming the decision. Four of our federal courts have already filed injunctions against the announced ban in 2017, and the cases will likely land at the feet of the Supreme Court, with the conservative Great White Hope, Neil Stolenseet Gorsuch. Listen, this ban will and does affect the estimated 1,500 transgender troops currently serving. They're framing the ban around mental health and physical health in regards to readiness, which is the same argument they use to prevent gay people from serving. So it's the same bigotry, new hat. Our president's bigotry would strip 15,500 patriots of their place in the service of their country. These people are to be celebrated and honored, not abused and rejected. I mentioned last episode that I would hit on what the omnibus spending bill that Donald is receiving hell for signing from his idiot hordes and from his propaganda network. Congress passed a $1.3 trillion spending bill that will keep the government open through the end of September. It has plenty to love and hate in it, which any bipartisan bill should have. Though, especially considering the Repubs have both chambers of Congress and have the White House, they sure didn't do very well. And Donald is clearly not the great negotiator he claimed to be.
You don't say!
They did not get to expand immigrant detention centers or to fund sanctuary cities. They didn't defund Planned Parenthood or get their precious wall. Democrats, however, got money for education and medical research, and the Republicans got a small amount for what was specifically defined in the bill as border fencing.
Hashtag no wall.
Republicans did, however, win in regards to fixing errors they made in their horrendous tax bill. See, Democrats were reluctant to help Republicans fix anything in the tax bill, as they should be, but they did strike a deal at the last minute to amend one of the huge errors the Republicans made in exchange for expanding the low-income housing tax credit that goes towards building more affordable housing. The IRS also got a $1.96 million budget boost to help implement their new tax law. And also, with this omnibus spending bill, according to Vox, quote, Education Secretary Betsy DeVos had some grand plans for the Department of Education, including budget cuts for public schools and after-school programs in exchange for $1 billion worth of spending to promote school choice programs, vouchers, and magnets. She wanted to eliminate a giant program for low-income students to go to college and slash $1.7 million from the Office of Civil Rights, a bureau within the Education Department that ensures equal access to education and enforces civil rights in school, which she had said had grown inefficient, unquote. And in the end, she got none of it.
Instead, the bill included a $3.9 billion increase in the department's funding. Ha! Another one was funding for the Census Bureau, which is a relief in a battle that's been going on for over a year for funding of what may as well be an essential service. The bill also included the Fix-Nics Act. It's a bill that'll reinforce the National Incident Criminal Background Check System.
Yay!
And sadly, the latest iteration of the Obamacare Stabilization Package did not make it into the bill. The spending bill also had a small victory for gun violence research. It stated that the CDC is no longer prohibited from spending money on gun violence research.
You win!
Also, in December, Donald's Labor Department Secretary Alex Acosta proposed a plan that would essentially allow employers to confiscate their workers' tips if they pay workers a minimum wage or above. The proposal would have repealed an Obama-era regulation that gave workers sole propriety over the tips they earn, as it should be. So, to preemptively protect workers, an amendment in the spending bill from Senate Democrat Patty Murray will bar employers from taking their workers' tips.
Thank you, Patty.
It is not 100%, as the language still allows employers to share workers' tips with the larger pool of workers if they are paid the full minimum wage, but still, it's a win. All in all, the Democrats came out way ahead in this deal, and once again we have proof that Republicans suck at governing. When it comes down to it, Democrats are in general who you want to bet on.
No facts, no bets, can bring back what's no longer there.
When politicians send their thoughts and prayers with no action, we say no more! And to those politicians supported by the NRA that allow the continued slaughter of our children and our future, I say get your resumes ready.
We need change now!
The real disruption to the educational process is staring down the barrel of a gun!
Yes, I am a Parkland survivor and an MSD student. But before this, I was a regular black girl. And after this, I am still black and I am still regular. And I will fight for all of us!
People have asked me, do you think any change is going to come from this? Look around. We are the change.
The Sandy Hook mass shooting should have been the last one in our nation, but there are more and more every single day. And that's why Newtown says enough, and we say never again.
Everybody here is standing with the future of our society, and for that, I thank you.
History was made this weekend in what was the largest day of protest in our nation's capital. An estimated 80,000 people descended on Washington, D.C. on Saturday for the worldwide March for Our Lives. Estimates on crowd size across America vary, but over a million at least joined the teenagers from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School who started the Never Again movement and inspired the nation to stand up to the epidemic of gun violence in America. It was wall-to-wall people in downtown Los Angeles, where I was. The crowd was massive. It spanned city blocks in every direction. It was the first march I've been to with so many children and young adults. They had funny, powerful, and pointed signs. One young brother and sister were covered in bullet holes and fake blood, holding signs that read, "Am I next?" Another, that was held by a chanting young girl who couldn't have been older than 9, read, "A school day shouldn't be my last day."
Come on, gun control! When do we want it now?
One sign simply read, "Ugh, guns." One young teenager's sign was riddled with bullet holes and read, "The number of bullet holes in the sign are the number that can be shot in the time it takes you to read this sign." There were survivor signs. Signs from survivors from Vegas, Virginia Tech, and of everyday street violence. One girl who had survived the Vegas shooting kept struggling through panic attacks marching in the crowd. Later, after the rally, in the crowd was performer Grandson as he performed his song Thoughts and Prayers with the West LA Children's Choir. The 17 children singing all wore black shirts numbered 1 through 17 on them. And behind those kids stood a line of kids wearing orange shirts that read Enough. They each held a sign with an artistic rendering of one of the people who died in the Parkland.
Welcome to my breakdown bulletproof backpacks.
It was just one of the powerful representations of this moment we found ourselves in. I kept thinking of how it was just a few months ago that the gun debate seemed profoundly hopeless. About this, more than anything in this country. Had you told me that in a few short months I would be marching tens of thousands of children in the largest student-led march since the Vietnam War, I would have laughed in your face. David Hogg, one of the kids who founded the Never Again movement, says this is the birth of a revolution.
And this revolution is going to require every single American getting out and becoming politically active.
And all the cynicism in the world cannot prevent me from believing him, because they have already accomplished more than I ever thought possible. It is no doubt that you have heard some of the speeches from the DC march, including the moment where Emma Gonzalez, the teenage force of nature, seemingly stopped the world.
6 minutes and 20 seconds with an AR-15, and my friend Carmen would never complain to me about piano practice. Aaron Feist would never call Kira Miss Sunshine. Alex Schachter would never walk into school with his brother Ryan. Scott Beagle would never joke around with Cameron at camp. Helena Ramsey would never hang out after school with Max. Gina Montalto would never wave to her friend Liam at lunch. Joaquin Oliver would never play basketball with Sam or Dylan. Elena Petty would never. Kara Lugren would never. Chris Hickson would never. Luke Hoyer would never. Marquin Duque Aguiano would never. Peter Wang would never. Alyssa Alhadaf would never. Jamie Guttenberg would never. Meadow Pollock would never.
In silence, she remained for 4 minutes and 25 seconds, tears streaming down her stoic face, and the crowd wept.
Since the time that I came out here, it has been 6 minutes and 20 seconds. The shooter has ceased shooting and will soon abandon his rifle, blend in with the students as they escape, and walk free for an hour before arrest. Fight for your lives before it's someone else's job.
And then there was the moment that Naomi Welder took the stage. The 11-year-old led a walkout at her elementary school March 14th as part of the national effort to bring attention to gun violence in America's schools.
I am here today to acknowledge and represent the African American girls whose stories don't make the front page of every national newspaper. Whose stories don't lead on the evening news. I represent the African-American women who are victims of gun violence, who are simply statistics instead of vibrant, beautiful girls that pull up potential.
She said she and her peers stood outside for 18 minutes, a minute longer than many schools around the country had planned to walk out. They added a minute, she said, for Cortland Arrington, a black girl who was killed in a school shooting in Alabama after the massacre in Parkland. Black communities are disproportionately affected by gun violence. In 2016, the FBI noted that black people accounted for 52% of murder victims. Nearly three quarters of murders that year were committed with guns. And while this conversation, when it does happen, tends to revolve around black men, due to domestic violence, according to the Violence Policy Center, black women experience the highest rates of gun homicide out of any group of women, and at a rate higher than white men.
For far too long, these names, these black girls and women, have been just numbers. I'm here to say never again for those girls too.
In 2017, a report from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention said that black women were the group most likely to experience fatal homicides. And women, of course, also fell victim to police shootings.
My friends and I might still be 11, and we might still be in elementary school, but we know. We know life isn't equal for everyone, and we know what is right and wrong. We also know that we stand in the shadow of the Capitol, and we know that we have 7 short years until we too have the right to vote.
The deaths of black women in police shootings spurred the creation of the hashtag Say Her Name movement in 2015. And a recent study from researchers at Washington University in St. Louis, looking at police shootings from May 2013 to January 2015, found that nearly 60% of black women killed by police were unarmed. Black children are disproportionately targeted by gun violence as well. According to an analysis of fatal and non-fatal childhood firearm injuries compiled by the CDC, black children face the highest rates of firearm mortality, a difference largely driven by black youth being more likely to be fatally shot by someone else. All of this has not been lost on the remarkable Parkland student activist. And this gives me concrete faith that these kids are going to take this movement all the way. The Parkland students met with the survivors of the 2016 Pulse Mike Club shooting in Orlando, Florida, students from Chicago, and students of color in D.C. to ensure that the fight against gun violence is an inclusive one. and by connecting with activists like Nazah Ari Kefra of Chicago's Anti-Gun Violence Project in Orange Tree, Parkland students are making sure that women and girls of color, particularly Black women, who have been fighting for gun control for years, have a voice in the current movement. In D.C., no adults took the mic, only teenagers and children. They held that stage, and I guarantee they will be holding that stage for years to come, serving as the voice America lost to vitriol, apathy, and cynicism. They will be the hope this country needs. But they cannot do it alone. We must work to pick up our own slack. We must work for a better America, if not for ourselves, but for them. The media's response to this movement has been pleasantly welcoming, save for Fox quote-unquote news. Of course. CNN and MSNBC held all-day coverage of the march. CBS News provided extensive multi-platform coverage of the march as well. MTV and several organizations sent 17 buses of young people from communities affected by gun violence to DC, and MTV News had live coverage all day, and so on. Fox kept coverage to a minimum, of course, and reframed the conversation around the Second Amendment and gun rights, while dismissing the students as too immature to know better, as though they were being used by leftist activists. And they also brought on students who disagree with the gun control advocates throughout the day. They sought to frame everything in, "These students want to take away all your guns and rights." Even Rubio tweeted to that effect. They're wrong, of course. Sensible gun control is not a push to take away all your damn guns. Even Rubio tweeted to that effect. Sadly, though, their efforts are effective. And the 19% of people who get all of their news from Trump's propaganda network believe every word of their tweet. Regardless, leaving them in the dust, the push for gun control marches on. With everything in this country, we move forward despite Fox and conservative cowards. And gun control is like the Kool-Aid man barreling through the walls of the 2018 election, inserting itself as a major issue demanding to be heard, respected, and navigated. When before, it was lucky to be an afterthought. And the drivers behind this newfound prominence on this national stage in the national debate are teenage kids. And gloriously, according to CNN, at long last, something has happened to hit gun manufacturers where it matters, their wallets. Gun sales are down, way down. And this is due to a couple of things. For one, the intense negativity surrounding their tiny dick death sticks, their guns. But not to be ignored is reason number two, which is they have lost a powerful and effective piece of propaganda, which says, "The evil liberal president is coming to take your guns!" The oldest gun manufacturer in the country, Remington, filed for bankruptcy this week. And they're blaming, get this, they're blaming the Sandy Hook shooting for their woes. Oh, poor babies. And can someone explain to me how gun manufacturers, even in slow times, go bankrupt? Guns sell in this country like hotcakes. Extremely deadly hotcakes. First National Bank of Omaha, FedEx, Enterprise, Alamo, Hertz, Budget, among them, have decided to stop giving NRA discounts or issuing NRA-branded credit cards. There is also enormous pressure on Amazon to get rid of NRA TV from its streaming service, at risk of losing tens of thousands of Prime members. Further, institutional investors are thinking about removing gun manufacturers from their portfolios. Investment management firm BlackRock, for example, has over $6 trillion in assets and is the largest shareholder in gun makers Strum Ruger, American Outdoor Brands, aka Smith & Wesson, as well as second largest shareholder in Vista Outdoor, which manufactures guns and ammunition under the brand names Bunshell, CCI Ammunition, Federal Premium, Gunnate, and about 20 others. In a statement Thursday, BlackRock said that it was going to investigate these manufacturers' responses to the recent school shootings. This news contributed to the almost 10% drop in stock prices that all three companies have suffered last month. Failed Republican presidential candidate and weak old slab of ham, Rick Santorum, who mind-numbingly has a voice and a platform in our political conversation because CNN has bafflingly low standards, had this to say on the kids who are taking matters into their own hands because us adults refuse to.
The Hollywood elites and the liberal billionaires who funded this, it's all about politics. Is this really all about politics, or is it all about keeping our schools safe? Because it is about keeping our schools safe. then we have to have much broader discussion than the discussion that's going on right now. How about kids, instead of looking to someone else to solve their problem, do something about maybe taking CPR classes or trying to deal with situations that where there is a violent shooter,
but
that you
how are they looking at other people? I would ask you, they took action.
Yeah, they took action to ask someone to pass a law. They didn't take action to say, how do I, as an individual, deal with this problem?
Regardless of the idiot detractors on the right, the momentum is with the Parkland survivors and gun control advocates. In the end, it is clear that if there are candidates, at least in the states that Hillary won, that don't thrust gun control into their campaign, then they are not tuned in to the pulse of the country enough to hold office. It is hard to believe that the shooting at Stoneman Douglas was only 5 weeks ago. This short time has shown that a few people can make a huge difference, that nothing is a lost cause, that we never really know what tomorrow holds, and whoever is not on board with this revolution will get left behind. Already, there is a small group of students in Wisconsin who are taking the march on the road all the way to Paul Ryan's district, 50 miles away. The group of 40 high school, middle school, and elementary school students set off from Madison in the direction of Janesville on Sunday in 37-degree weather, wearing their warmest winter clothes and best walking shoes. And some wore shirts that read, 50 miles more. 17-year-old Brendan Fardella, one of the march organizers, said, quote, I think we have a unique opportunity because the Speaker of the House is the most important member of the House, and he's from Wisconsin. This is a unique way to catch his attention and call him out for his constant burying of possible gun legislation that would save hundreds of lives every day in this country, unquote. They said they were inspired by those in the 1960s who organized the multi-day 54 miles Selma to Montgomery marches in Alabama. 18-year-old Katie Elder, another march organizer, said, quote, at a time when people said that they were marching for what was impossible, they made the impossible possible. We are picking up where the young people of that time left off, unquote. The students used social media to organize and spread the word of their march in Wisconsin. Then, on Saturday night, they bused students willing to march from other high schools from around the state to Madison. The group plans on trekking about 13 miles a day. They hope to arrive in Janesville on March 28th around noon. At each mile, the marchers will honor a victim of gun violence. The students have also been tweeting out the names and ages of the victims. To keep up morale, some students on Sunday carried speakers blasting music. At mile four, their song of choice was The Story of Tonight from the musical Hamilton.
No matter what they tell you,
let's have another round tonight.
Raise a glass to the four of us.
Tomorrow there'll be more of us
telling the story of tonight.
Despite contacting Eddie Munster, Paul Ryan's office, he has yet to respond. Once they reach Janesville, the students will hold a gun reform rally at Trexler Park, where young people will share the stage to address attendees. And consider this. At the March for Our Lives was thousands upon thousands of children who would have never otherwise gotten exposure to activism or politics or any kind of a civic anything. How many kids at a young age or at any age are exposed to the idea of civic responsibility or to the notion that people have the power to affect change? To work towards something bigger, something better in this country. Emma Gonzalez, David Hogg, Cameron Caskey, and the other leaders of the movement are now a different kind of role model, a different kind of hero than kids usually have. They're not a Kardashian, a pop star, or a mythical superhero. In a culture that reveres the impossible and the shallow, they are as real as it gets. Consider the generation that'll now be moved to influence and inspired to do good for this world. There is an untapped potential for the future of this country, one I had not imagined possible. Thank you for sticking with me and this episode of K Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download the show at crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. I'm also on Citizen Truth. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice and on Facebook at K Voice of Resistance. All right, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
Resist!